This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, welcome to another Brock and Salk podcast. Hi, everybody. Brock, Kyle, you're back this week.
Estoy aquí.
You realize that escaping Rashad Penny talk is fruitless?
Can't outrun him forever, Mike.
No, you are back and to face the music. Boy, howdy is here. Hi, howdy.
Howdy.
And Brock, it's only a matter of time. I see you are wearing your purple sweatshirt with a big W on it. I can't wait to hear how it's good news that Chris Peterson has left the program, their most successful coach since Don James. And I'm sure you will be telling me that this was all good news, that this only makes the program stronger and better, and nothing could be better than Chris Peterson leaving. It was the best when he came. It was the best when he was here. And now it is going to be the best that he's leaving. Thank God Chris Peterson is out of here, because now they get Jimmy Lake. I can't wait.
Are you done?
I can't wait for the second segment. I can't wait for this.
And the hay is
in the
barn. And
then they're going to promote Push Hamden, and that's going to make them better. And Chris Peterson is going to, he's going to partner with Jen Cohen, and they're going to be like co-athletic directors, and then she's going to be even better. And then, and this is going to be a big purple, wonderful fest. I can't wait to hear about the whole thing.
Howdy, where's the hay?
I've been thinking about this since yesterday.
It's in the barn.
All right, when gotta
go. When the news first came down on Chris Peterson, all I could think of was, Brock's going to say what great news this is.
Brock's got to get his talking points ready.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, oh, you know what? Brock was exactly right. Brock's been talking about this for years.
I did
but
say
no,
that.
You don't do
I did
that.
Say
no,
that.
You
no,
don't
I said
do that.
That too.
That's
we'll,
not you.
We'll get there eventually,
I said
all
that
right?
too.
We got to stay on brand here, Brock. People know the Brock and Salk show. For a few set of things. One of which being that Brock is going to tell us everything that the Huskies do is good news
it's good
in some
news,
fashion.
Right?
And Mike is going to do whatever
so
it
good.
Takes
sure.
to cut Brock out from his knees right off the bat. Brock and Salk.
Yes, here it is. 10, 11 years of this. Oh, you did call it. Congratulations. And we will get to that, I promise, in the second part of this podcast
good.
Today. But I just can't wait to hear how they're going to improve because they've gotten rid of it. Jimmy Lake is a man to take them to glory. Oh, man. All right. So that's coming
up. Well, gird your loins for it. Be ready.
It's coming, baby.
Consider my loins girded. Is that what the Seahawks had to do this Monday night against the Vikings? What is wrong with this team? Why can't you just let me love you?
What is wrong with this team?
They're
you tell
and,
me.
They're 10-2 leading the West.
They can't just win normally.
No,
they have
oh
the best
God.
Record in the NFL.
I know, it's amazing.
Is number there, one in the NFL.
What is more amazing? That the Seahawks have the best record in the NFL right now as we record this podcast, or the Mariners start to last season? Which is more confounding?
Mm.
The Mariners start.
Right, it's the Mariners start. Definitely the Mariners start. That yes. was one of the – I mean, that caused Jerry DePoto to say that they were just taking a step
Look, when
back
we said we're
to see the forest
back,
for the trees.
It wasn't we're going to be worse. We
right.
just want to see the trees
well, even
for
our,
the forest.
Even our okay, boy was, wrote an article about the team and
true.
Vogie and
oh, yeah.
you know the hitting coach and yeah. the video they were watching.
That
right?
was – All right, that was more improbable. Fair.
Yes, passing.
But this is also incredibly improbable, right?
Well, it's just that every game is a one-possession game. I mean, that's what's improbable, and you're 10-2 in those. Right? I was texting with Kurt Menefee, and he was saying, right, the bizarro Chargers. They're the bizarro Chargers. The Chargers are one-possession game every game, and they lose every one of them. They just find ways to lose. The Seahawks are one-possession games. Even when you're up 17 points in the fourth quarter at home and there's no Adam Thielen and you've gotten the Vikings out of their game and they're totally one-dimensional, it still doesn't matter. They're going to hit a big play. They're going to get another play. There's going to be a turnover, and all of a sudden, wow, it's going to come down to 3rd-and-1 with 2 minutes to go, and you better get that conversion. Or it's going to come down to Akeem King on Irv Smith, and you better knock that ball away on 4th down, which they did. So, yeah, Mike, this team, and we have said this for a number of weeks, I'll stand by what I said. They are the most resilient team of any we've seen in a decade, number one. But number two, every one of these games is going to be hard.
Yep.
The Cardinals are going to be hard. The Panthers are going to be hard. The Rams next week are going to be hard. Every one of them is going to be hard. And frankly,
it will be just like them, by the way, to do all make all those games hard and then blow out the Niners in the final game of the
yes,
season.
Quite
beat
possibly.
Them by like 35 points. You'd be like, what?
The 49ers are like plus 139.
I know.
right? From a point differential,
they're
you're plus 36.
Yeah.
You're plus 36.
Yeah, they're right around the same as the Rams, yes. Who are like four games behind them.
Yes. But they believe, and you know, this is where I think some of the advantage is starting to come in, too, and why yesterday or on Monday morning when I was chatting with the morning guys, like, I got to pick them to win.
Of course.
Like, because not only do they believe they're going to win, I think they're now getting to the point, and the San Francisco, to me, was maybe the turning point, when that opponent's on the other side going, oh, man, here we go, right? This is what they're built to do. They're going to find a way to win. That quarterback and that team and that they're going to find some way to win this thing.
And it's interesting, you know, when you talk about being the bizarro Chargers, my mind goes to, yeah, what's the big difference between the Seahawks and Chargers? Coaching, but also quarterback. I mean, Phillip Rivers looks like he's toast, yep. And Russell Wilson's in the prime of his career doing everything right, except he was – I mean, if you're listing reasons they won, you know, this Monday night game against the Vikings, where's Russ on that list? Like eighth?
No, he's way up. He made two bad plays. He tried to bat a ball and he took a bad sack. Outside of that, he really did not miss a throw.
He played well.
He was tremendous on third down. Every third down, if you want to run the ball, that's great, but you're going to get to third and four,
yeah,
and that slant
those.
Better
True.
Be right on the money. That's that right. Back shoulder better be right on that money.
But
that slant
be pointing
better be
to
right
the
on
defense,
the money.
And you'd be pointing to their running game, and you'd be pointing to their offensive line. There's a lot of names you'd probably get to. All right, fine, Russell's still going to be up near the top because he's the quarterback, but not like it was at the beginning of this year when he was dragging a two-win roster around and just willing them to victory. Russell played okay.
Chris Carson was a man.
He was awesome, and Rashad Penny had another really good game, and that offensive line was opening up huge holes for those guys. Yes. And when it all came down to it, you knew that was going to be. If they were up 17, I was sitting with Bob Stelton, and I was just like, you know, they're going to let them back into this game. He's like, really? Like, yep. Sure enough, the next play was the Russell pick. You're like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, just the number of ways they attempt to lose games and then find ways to win them is staggering, with the fumbles and the picks and just the blown coverage. Last night, all right, so this Monday night game, I said last week that I had the perfect Pete Carroll sequence of events, right? It involved like
the Philadelphia game.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, well,
the turnover,
it was close.
And delay a game, false start, first and 20. Yes.
Yeah, run the ball and then throw deep for a touchdown. You're like, gosh, this might have been the perfect Pete Carroll game. This had all of the right Pete Carroll elements in it. It had bad luck, blown assignments, brilliant fake, smash mouth running, opportunistic defense, and yes, a complete reckless waste of timeouts, including, I think, the worst of the Pete Carroll era.
One of the single worst timeouts in the NFL, probably this year.
We'll get to that. Let me see if I can go through a few of these, because it starts with some bad luck. This team had a lot of bad luck in that game, wouldn't you say? Mm. I mean, what are the odds of this happening? Oh, do you have my thing up here? Here, bring me up here, Kyle. Let me play this
sound.
Here we go.
Don't worry.
Minnesota looks like they might want to blitz. They rush five. Russ steps up. Ball is tipped up in the air. Russell slaps it away, but it's picked off. It's going to go the other way for a touchdown. Anthony Harris, the safety for Minnesota. The ball was tipped up in the air, and Russell wisely tried to slap it to the ground, and instead Harris came running out of nowhere, picked it off, and went 21 yards untouched for the touchdown.
Has anyone ever sounded more disgusted than Steve Rabel?
Did he want to swear right there? I think he wanted to swear.
And it is picked up for a touchdown. That's disgusting.
Minnesota looks like they might want to blitz. They rush
five. He pauses before he's going to drop it.
Ball is tipped up in the air. Russell slaps it away, but it's picked off. It's going to go the other way for a touchdown. Anthony Harris, the safety for Minnesota.
And I don't blame him.
Leaping touchdown.
Like, are you kidding me? How many times have you seen that play? However many times the ball's been batted back to the quarterback just, you know, calmly bats it to the ground.
Too short.
What they're supposed to do.
Too short.
Well, he was on that play.
Yes, he was.
He was. Not because it got deflected, but because he could barely reach the ball to tip it back to the ground. Russ, just let it go.
He hit the guy's wrist. Batted it with his wrist.
Unbelievable. So that's bad luck.
Yes.
Right? Wouldn't you say? I mean, yeah. I don't really know what else to call that other than just a really bad luck play. You definitely had blown assignments, because I'm not sure what else to call Laquon Treadwell going like 75 yards for a touchdown. That's not supposed to happen, right?
No, that was too deep, something they don't do a ton. But I think now with these two veteran safeties, they'll sprinkle it in. That was to be too deep coverage, and that was Mr. McDougal that had that half the field. but he was trying to gamble. He was taking a little shot. He saw that the inside linebackers, you know, they'd left some a void there and some space, so he tried to jump inside, and Kirk scrambled, and see you later.
Yeah.
That was the antithesis of everything you were supposed to do in that moment. Right. You play that coverage because you make them throw it underneath. That cannot and should not ever happen.
You're up by that amount. All you got to do is just kind of
just keep it on.
Just
keep
the game in front of you.
Yep.
I mean, they can score a touchdown.
Let 2-3 minutes roll off.
Let it take 4 minutes. Yep. Like, okay, you scored a touchdown, you got us, but we're playing chess against you, right? And you're just moving and positioning.
So you're up 17, so that cut it to 10.
Yes. You just can't allow that to happen. But it also had some of the trademark Pete Carroll aggressiveness.
So Michael Dixon on to punt. Hughes is deep for Minnesota. Fake punt. It's coming near side. Running the football. He's down inside Minnesota territory. It was Travis Homer. A fake punt. Michael Dixon ran like he was going to chase a bad snap. It was a direct snap to the upback, Travis Homer, who goes 29 yards before he's knocked out of bounds on the near sidelines. You get one chance a season to run one of those. And what a great choice by the Seahawks. Perfect blocking. And Homer, wow, he accelerates up the field all the way into Minnesota territory at the 39.
Made a lick on that kid at the end, too,
sure,
huh?
Sure did. Yeah, that was pretty cool. So that is all set up, not necessarily just once a year. That's all predicated on what Minnesota's doing. So because of their front end and the way they play it, and you study that going into the game, and you say, okay, if they give us this look, are we going to be willing to do it? You're up 10 in the fourth quarter. You just stalled. You'd given up that touchdown, but they gave you that look. So before you run out, you make sure Brian Schneider, the special teams coach, says to Pete, hey, if we get that look here, you good? And Pete's got to sign off on that. Like, he's the final, like, yep, I'll sign off on it. And then
you
ultimately,
know Pete signing off.
Oh, yeah, and they get that look, and you know Homer's back there like, oh, my gosh, this is Monday Night Football. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to get this. And then you got to seal that edge, and he got it, and that was a big-time decision.
Yeah, it didn't matter because they fumbled like 2 plays later.
DK fumbled on third down. Yes, he did.
What's going on with that guy?
Gosh, how many fumbles does he have this
year? It's like 5, I think.
It's a lot of fumbles.
It feels like every game there's a threat of it, and he played great before that. He was a grown man bouncing back from the Philly game, and I think 6 of 7 on targets to him, and jeesh.
For as good as he's been, there's a handful of things that if he gets better at it, he'll be unreal.
Yes.
True.
Like, if he holds onto the ball all season long.
Which feels like something he should be able to do. Like, that doesn't feel like a huge adjustment he would need to make.
If he cuts half of his drops out, he'll be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, so frustrating. She's like, okay, you've got the first down. Nope. And then here comes the fumble. And it just feels like it's one
here
thing.
Here comes the drive for another touchdown, and now the game's within four.
It's really remarkable. Yep. So that's some of the negative. The positive, though, is it features one of Pete Carroll's favorite things in the world, and that is smash mouth, run it down your throat football, and it culminates with a Chris Carson first down to seal the game.
Russ goes up under center. Carson the single setback. Hollister in motion. On the left side, Carson takes the handoff. He's got the first down. He breaks through. He barrels over a defender inside the 25. DJ Fluker is slapping hands with anybody who'll stick their hand out. An 11-yard gain and a first down. And now there's the clock ticking down to the 2-minute warning.
I point to that one. And look, over 200 yards is great. It's a little inflated because of the homer play. It counts as a running play. But still, I mean, Carson over 100 yards.
Still a 200-yard day.
Penny had a great game as well. And I point to that one because how many NFL games do you watch where it comes down to the end of the game, the other team's got their timeouts because they haven't foolishly wasted them on 3 ridiculous, and they just get the ball right back because you can't get a first down, and now all of a sudden it's a 7-point game or a 4-point game or whatever the case may be, and all they need is a touchdown, and they have over a minute to do it. So,
how about San Francisco, 4th and 1 in Baltimore?
That's right.
Well, getting in the shotgun. How many times, Mike, have you over the years been screaming about getting the shotgun on 3rd and 1 or 4th and 1 in those situations? That time, and this is a little public service announcement to the job that Brian Schottenheimer is doing, and let's give credit where credit is due. When Brian Schottenheimer was hired, he was mocked, he was laughed at, he was pointed at and said he's adult, he's not innovative, he's not creative, and let's play this soundbite of Brian Schottenheimer saying, we're going to run the ball when they know we're going to run the ball. Well, guess what? They knew you were running the ball. There was no fooling it in that situation. And guess what you did? You ran it against one of the elite rushing, stop the run rush defenses in this league, and you rammed it right down their throat. Mm-hmm. And the Dancing Bear, 350 pounds, go watch Fluker after that play.
He was jacked up.
Was that just incredible? He did an awesome job. Little Joey Hunt.
I didn't get to see that because the moment Carson ran for the first down, I took off running to get out of the stadium.
Oh, you always get ahead.
Yes, like, I better get out. This game's over, and I am out.
Best sport.
Is it possible that little Joey Hunt
popped a hernia last night trying to run out of there?
That there's an advantage, our David and Goliath, that there's an advantage to being little between 250 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
If he can just kind of wiggle between those two guys.
He's like John Stockton on the offensive line. Like, you never expect him to be any good at anything other than passing the ball. And all of a sudden, he takes it away from you. Or all of a sudden, he knocks down a three.
And all of a sudden, he gets to the second level and lets those two behemoths move people. He gets a hat to the second level. The left side washes it down. Even little Jacob Hollister puts his body in front of Everson Griffin. And you move the ball on third and one. Brian Schottenheimer's done a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And a level of creativity. Look, we talked about this a couple weeks ago on this podcast, right? Brian Schottenheimer's got to get credit. Russell Wilson's having an MVP type of a season.
Chris Carson's at nearly 1,000 yards.
They're running the ball with two running backs now.
Rookie receiver is the best rookie receiver in the league. Right? I mean, I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, but I was going to say the same thing. You're winning with and getting big contributions from the Malik Turners of the world. Tyler Lockett is hurt, didn't have a catch in this game on Monday night, and really was a non-factor against Philadelphia. So for 2 weeks now,
one catch.
Your best threat by far,
yes.
And your only real experienced, valuable veteran at wide receiver is a non-entity for the last 2 weeks, and yet Brian Schottenheimer and Russell Wilson have found a way to continue to do their thing. So a lot of credit for the smash mouth running. And yes, Kyle, I hope you're ready to give Penny a little credit.
2 weeks, he's been looking great.
Two straight weeks now, and there have been some others along the way. But for these 2 weeks, He looks like a first-round pick.
Just a unique burst, right?
He looks as good as Sony Michel or as Nick Chubb or any of those other guys.
As much as anything last night, I thought he just looked confident.
Yes.
Like he got the ball and he hit a hole like he knew where he was.
He's not doing anything special. He's just actually doing the run as it's set.
I mean, look, I don't want to keep harping on this, and it's not a... I honestly believe that they are finally putting him in position to do things that he does well, instead of putting him in position to do things he doesn't do well. He's not good at zone read. I don't know what the deal is. I know he didn't run much of it at San Diego State, right? But he's not good at that. He's just not a good zone read runner. When you get him in the shotgun and force him to take a handoff and look and decide which direction he wants to go, he's not very good at it. But if you give him the ball on toss sweep, if you give him the ball on a draw, if you give him the ball running downhill, he's fast. He has pretty good vision. He understands one cut and go. He just seems to be a lot better in those situations.
That screen pass was pretty elite. That screen pass out in space.
For the touchdown?
Yes. And it's his burst. It's his confidence. It's all of those things that have come together just over the last couple weeks. And how easy would it have been to just bury him? Right? How easy would it have been a number of times this season? And this is what happens with the Mike Zimmers of the world.
They could have buried Chris Carson, too. I mean, this is Pete Carroll at his best.
Could have buried DK Metcalf.
Not burying any of these guys.
Traded Rashad Penny at the deadline.
Yes. And
they didn't.
And a lot of veteran, salty NFL coaches would have done that. You know what? You're a rookie. I've given you enough opportunities, DK. You fumbled every game. I'm sorry. You're going to be in the doghouse, and we're going to play a veteran guy ahead of you. Chris Carson, you just can't fumble this much. We're going to give the other guys, and we're going to maybe even give this other rookie, Homer, an opportunity this year. Don't do it. Right? They just – sorry, Rashad, you fumbled at a critical moment in a game, and you've put on weight, and you're not doing these things. It could have just absolutely disciplined and buried you, and they don't. I mean, that's just not Pete's way. And you see it last night as well. Pete's just life of the party.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just stinking loves it. Right? He just, their record, what are they, 19-5-1? Did you see him running off the field?
Is that peace sign or is that fight on? Is that USC?
It was fight on as he's running
fight
off
on.
The field and he's punching in the air and he just loves it. Right? Part of the reason they're 19-5-1 on Monday night or whatever ridiculous it is, Pete, he loves it. Other people get small and they get nervous.
Like Kirk Cousins?
Oh. Yes.
What did they say Cousins is 0-12 on Monday night?
0-9.
Cousins attempted one
pass. What's the deal with that?
Over 5 yards in a half of football. One pass over 5 yards attempted.
Why?
Crazy.
Why was that? I mean, Kirk Cousins is a perfectly good quarterback.
He looked like the Cougs in the Apple Cup every single year.
I knew this was going to...
Every single year.
If you start coming at Mike Zimmer this time, Howdy, I'm going to be real upset. Don't come at Mike Zimmer.
Uh-oh. Anyway.
Amazing. absolutely amazing in every capacity for that team to just get it done, to be sitting here at 10-2 with the right. best record and atop the NFC
West. As I kind of go through these, perfect Pete Carroll things, opportunistic defense. Is their defense, was it good on Monday night or not? It certainly was good when they needed it to be, right? I mean,
Quandre Diggs certainly laid the biggest hit we've seen in that building in how many years?
3 years.
Whenever Cam Chancellor left.
Cam tweeted out the hit last night, yeah. So he got the respect of the man.
Bro, that was...
What, the two clowny hits?
Yes.
I mean, both times coming off the edge of smack.
Yes. You're just done. You're stopped in your tracks.
They did some things opportunistically. The huge third and fourth down stops at the end of the game.
They stopped Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook was right there. He's ahead of Chris Carson. He's run for over 1,000 yards this year. They made them totally one-dimensional.
And yet
you have the
blown assignment for the touchdown to Laquon Treadwell, who I keep wanting to call David Treadwell. Do you remember him? The old kicker?
No, I do.
David Treadwell.
But you get two takeaways.
You get KJ Wright, who just completely whiffs on a tackle in the first possession and ends up setting there's another missed tackle, I think it was by Diggs, that set up that first touchdown mm-hmm. right off the bat. You had a couple of plays just they gave up 30 points. So, I mean, like at some point you look at it, I know seven of them came directly off the turnover, but they are giving up points, and yet in the moments they come away with a couple big turnovers, yep. right? You get a fumble, and you get the pick.
Yep.
What a great play by Trey Flowers, by the way, in the pick.
Yes.
Balanced off by the god-awful pass interference he had yes. a few minutes later. But
yes.
you just very opportunistic in playing big in the right moments, which
is
exactly what Pete wants them to do.
If they just simply take the ball away twice a game, you're gonna win 13 and win this division. If they keep doing that, and that's been one of the biggest differences since Quandre Diggs has been in this lineup, it's like it's activated everybody. Instead of me just waiting around for somebody else to make a play, you feel like, oh, okay, with this guy back there, I've got confidence to pull the trigger, and Bradley McDougald's more comfortable, and Shaquille is more comfortable, and the linebackers can pull the trigger. Like, everybody is yeah. not just waiting nervous energy. They're taking the ball away.
I know McDougald had the one blown coverage, and maybe that was his fault, but, God, he played really well other than that.
Yeah.
I mean, you see him around the ball constantly in a way that he was not for the first, seven or eight weeks of the season. Now, all of a sudden, he's everywhere again.
Okay, that's all good. Now get to it. Let's
what
go.
Is
you've been sitting on
deal with
this.
The timeouts?
Go.
How could you How could you possibly be so callously uninterested
you went
in your timeouts?
10 minutes without it. That's really, really impressive.
I was bound and gagged watching the game. People were not allowing me near my phone.
I guarantee you, whatever day it was, Tuesday, when Pete Carroll walked in with Gallant and Dan, he's like, oh, thank God
Salk's not here.
Salk's not here to ask me about these worst timeouts.
The three timeouts that he called in the second half, one of them was after they had a first down.
Yeah.
they ran the ball for a first down, better call timeout. No reason for it whatsoever. Russell's like about to snap the ball, and then Pete was like laughing on the sideline.
It was a weird play. They had Fant in on the right side. I don't know if they had like a weird play on. But they called timeout right beforehand and then changed personnel. They pulled Fant out.
All right.
It made me think they were going to run something tricky. Well, they were like, not now.
That sure didn't work. The second one, they had a clock issue. They had to call timeout because the clock was running out. Bear in mind, they got to the line of scrimmage and out of the huddle to the line with 17 seconds left.
You rewound to make sure you were right on that.
It might have been 13. It was somewhere between 13 and 17. How does it pop? That's not enough time to figure out what you want to do with the line of scrimmage?
Check with me system now.
Brock,
there's a lot of stuff going on with Minnesota's defense.
How could it possibly take that long?
He's got to figure it all out.
All right. That, by the way, after calling timeout, I think it was like a 3rd and 3. They did not convert. And then the last one, and this truly this doesn't make any sense. It's 3rd and 19. You can't get the play in on time. Whatever. It's 3rd and 19. You can't tell me that having another timeout isn't more important than the difference between 3rd and 19 and 3rd and 24.
Just burn them all.
Just let it go, Pete.
Just burn all three.
Just let it go.
And Pete, you are in the back of his head because he did say after the game that was not a great time.
It wasn't?
That was a regrettable decision.
Really? He said that?
It didn't come back to cost him.
Pete is so locked in those moments. He cannot see anything other than the present situation.
Nope.
This situation, okay, this would be better if I called a timeout. I have a better idea if I call a timeout. I'll make this situation
just
better.
Let it go. Let it go, Pete. There it is. Thank you. Just let it go. It's 3rd and 19. You're going to punt. Doesn't matter if it's 3rd and 19 or 3rd and 24. Just let it go. Don't call timeout.
Damn.
Because he thinks it's going to work.
He thinks what's going to work?
He thinks every...
He's got a third and 19 play?
Oh, no, this is the wrong play.
I
got to call timeout.
I swear to God.
I know there's another play that I can make this
Thankfully,
work.
They did at least throw the ball down the field on the third and 19 that ensued, right? It was like... they were still like 7 yards short. But at least they like made an attempt. I swear to God, if they'd gone with a draw on that third and 19 after calling timeout, I was about to hurl myself off some large balcony. Like, what? Why? Why? Oh, my God. They are really frustrating, but yet they find these incredible ways to win, and it kind of leads. Are they? Could you make the argument that they should be better than 10-2? Like, are they better than a 10-2 team or not as good as a 10-2 team?
I mean, they still should have beat Teddy Bridgewater at home.
I know. Mm-hmm. Right?
So, yes.
Like, some of the mistakes they've made seem totally correctable.
There's two missed field goals.
That too.
The opponents have game-winning field
That's true.
Goals.
But you also have some of these ridiculous fumbles they've had, like the Jerron Brown fumble, the DK Metcalf fumbles.
Plus 36,
Russell doesn't throw picks often, but when he does, ooh boy.
Yeah. Jeez. Half of his picks this year have been pick sixes.
Yes.
Four picks, two of them for pick six. And he went like 7 years of his career having thrown no pick
and
sixes.
And three of his four picks are like, what in the world just happened kind of picks. Yeah. The two pick sixes and the one against San Francisco, where you're just like, dude, you're about to win the game.
Yes.
And you just throw an awful, awful pick.
I will take 10-2 at plus 36 scoring differential. I'll take 10-2.
Okay. So they are a 10. They are in good shape at 10-2.
I think most economists would say they're probably closer to an 8-4, 7-5 team at plus 32. So at 10-2, you have a sense of belief that's unique. You have a quarterback that is clutch. You have a head coach that gets the most out of his players, right? You don't bury your guys. You instill in them a bunch of confidence. And Quandre Diggs has made a difference over the last 4 to 5 weeks.
Has he been the biggest difference maker?
What else changed? What else changed as far as personnel or decision making?
You played one game without Clowney in there.
Yeah.
You played Ziggy did come alive and he was good again on Monday night. So you've had kind of two in a row with Ziggy, but you're right. The only major thing
Jaren Reed has helped. Yeah. Ziggy Ansah's come to life a little bit. Yes.
And think when Bobby comes back. Oh, Bobby's playing my bad. Sorry.
Bobby doing this again.
Bobby
sorry.
He had 10 tackles on Monday night. Yes.
Led the team in tackles. All right. He's on pace to have 152 tackles, second most in his entire career.
Has he been invisible, though?
It feels
it's crazy.
You're just waiting for him to have that breakout game.
Like, where's the big play?
Yeah,
the big Bobby Wagner
fumble.
Moment.
Yeah, you're still waiting upon that, and yet you're 10-2.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Well, and maybe those are the things that you're going to see. I mean, Bobby maybe comes up with a couple of those plays in the last few. Maybe you're going to need it. Maybe you're going to need it to beat the Rams. Maybe you're going to need it to beat the Niners in the final game of the season.
I'll say it again.
Could they end up 14-2?
If you take the ball away, you will be 14-2.
Right?
But takeaways typically come and go.
Yeah.
Right?
If you give the ball away like you do, though, you may end up being, 11-5.
Yep.
Right? I mean, like, that's kind of where this thing has gone for them. Any debate on running backs? I mean, Carson, last week there was some of this push of Penny should be the starter, which I thought was ridiculous. As much as I like Penny, I thought that was ridiculous. But they both had good games.
You know what the essence of competition is supposed to do? Make them better. And don't doubt for a second that day that Rashad Penny had, the 100-yard day in Philly, some of the conversation about Rashad, don't think for a second that didn't impact Chris Carson. And on a Monday night game in a contract year where I'm sure he would like to get paid after year number three, that he says, Rashad, you're really good, but I was a 1,000-yard rusher.
Say that, but he also tapped out to give Rashad Penny the touchdown from the 1-yard line.
He was a little bit gassed. He's not going to be selfish. I don't think he's
That's not how Penny phrased it after the game.
No,
did
those two got a great
those?
Friendship. Those two got a unique relationship. But don't tell me the competition and when the other guy is balling out isn't going to bring out the best in me. That big number 32 looking so good. It looks even better when what number is Penny?
20.
When number 20 is, by the way, looking so good, number 32 wants to look so good and even a little bit more. And man, he had some juice on Monday night.
What does it do to CJ Prosize?
Is CJ Prosize fired up about anything?
I don't know.
Is he like...
Was he active?
No.
He was hanging with LJ Collier in the healthy scratch room.
I was surprised to see Jerron Brown active.
Yeah, I made a catch.
I didn't know he was on the team. I'm dead. I was like, whoa, my Jerron Brown, didn't they cut that guy?
You know what that is for last
His
night?
His first catch since week 7.
Honestly, you
want to
know what that's for last night? That's for run blocking. Why did they go 6-0 linemen right. with George Fant in more than any other team in the NFL all season on Monday night? To run block. Why is Duron in there? Because he'll run block. He'll come down, he'll block linebackers, he'll come down, block safeties, and he'll do whatever is required. It's a pretty cool deal. I mean, it's kind of funny to laugh, like who's active, who's not active. But you know what? This is your role. And that's usually what elite teams have. Like, if you're going to have this role and you're going to get your opportunity, don't pout and whine. And when you get it, go make it happen.
It's pretty cool.
And how do you brought up that Cousins didn't really throw the ball down the field. Is that the best explanation for no sacks at home?
Yes. Yeah, because they still hit him and impacted him and moved him.
Cousins doesn't really get sacked at all anyways because he's so afraid of contact and pressure. He is so afraid. I think it's what happens when you grow up homeschooled. Like, you get a little bit insulated from everything as the homeschooled Tom Brady. Oh. And so I think that he's just sort of created a protective bubble around
he's
himself.
He's so antisocial. He just doesn't want people coming around.
Get the ball out as fast as you can so nobody will touch you.
All right. Last thing. Maybe we'll get to this a little bit later in more detail. But the MVP race... Russ has taken a few steps behind Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, I love Russ. I'm here to vouch for him at any point.
Mm-hmm.
But watching Lamar Jackson on Sunday, watching Russell play well, I mean, certainly well enough to beat Minnesota in a big game on Monday night, but not really do anything spectacular. Lamar Jackson is his team. It's crazy. Well, how much of that game did you watch on Sunday? Were you able to watch
to see
a lot of
bits
it?
And pieces?
God, I watched almost that entire game.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fourth quarter, and I'm rooting like heck for Baltimore, obviously, rooting against San Francisco.
Yep.
Anytime they did anything other than let him run, I was mad.
Yep.
Like, anytime he threw the ball, I was mad.
Yeah.
Anytime he handed the ball off, I was mad. Anytime he did anything other than running, and if he dropped back to pass and didn't allow the play to break down to take off running, I was mad. He's ridiculous.
There's no way he can run like this over a sustained period of time. Is there?
Yes, there is.
You think so for a sustained period of time?
Yes, for like 3-4-5 years.
I'm
saying yes.
There's no way.
I'm saying he can.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think
he's ridiculous.
Cam Newton couldn't do it.
Nope.
Russell Wilson couldn't do it.
Cam Newton was totally different.
Todd Gurley couldn't do it.
Cam Newton was totally different. Those guys are totally different. Lamar Jackson is fascinating. Mm-hmm. I cannot stop watching him. You also told me he wasn't accurate. He's perfectly accurate.
Nah, he's not.
Yeah, he is.
He's
perfectly accurate.
Yeah,
he's
okay.
Just fine.
Yep.
You were wrong.
Oh, okay. All right. You want to bet on this one
Mike
for the next
really,
3-4 years?
Really wants to prove this narrative that he's got going with running quarterbacks, right? He really, really needs Lamar Jackson.
He's on my list.
I'd like to bet that he's not going to sustain and do something that's never, ever been done in the history of the NFL.
Which is what?
To run at the quarterback position the way that he's running.
Well,
He's
rushed now for 1,000
Russell
yards.
Had 1 year for – no, he's not quite to 1,000 yet. Russell had 1 year
– 987
Yeah, Russell had 1 year for 860. Vic had a couple years to sustain this at 195 pounds and running between the tackles. I'll raise my hand and say not sustainable for years and years
sustainable.
To come. For this season, very possible.
Sustainable.
Okay.
I'm setting my position.
Love it.
It is sustainable.
Awesome.
All right. Well, speaking of you, Brock, let's let's get right to this here, and let's find out how the best thing in the world happened to the Washington Husky program this week. That's next. All right, Brock, I've been preparing for this since the moment Kyle told me that Chris Peterson had resigned. Mm-hmm. Tell me how this is the best thing that could have possibly happened to the Washington program.
I can't tell you that. I can tell you that this is exactly what I've told you guys
privately
and publicly for years.
You have said that for a while. Now, I was telling people that yesterday. Jokes aside, mm-hmm. Brock has been saying this. I'm not saying that you predicted that it would happen yesterday or necessarily even that this would be the offseason that it would occur, but you were absolutely and have been saying for a while that eventually Chris Peterson would leave before his time.
I think the very first
podcast.
On this
very podcast, even.
When Jimmy Lake walks in a room, there's just a difference. He's the D coordinator there at Washington. He's done a phenomenal job. He's putting all these dudes in the league. He's recruiting like crazy. But anyhow, Jimmy finishes, and Joe Davis turns to me. He's like, I mean, that's like, how's that guy not a head coach?
When's he going to be? Next year?
Well, I think he will have this job. Whenever Chris
really?
Says.
You think he's going to be coaching? He's willing to wait 5-10 more years?
Whenever Chris says, you know what? I'm good. I'm good.
No,
I don't think Chris Peterson didn't have 10 more years. I don't think,
you think he's out in the next couple of years.
I think Chris Peterson, if he can get to a playoff and do something like that, I don't think Chris Peterson, I would say 5 years would be the longest. It ends up being 5 months
weeks.
After that.
When was
that?
I don't remember any of that conversation.
That was
I participated
October
in that.
1st.
Wow.
That was our first podcast on October 1st. And you were actually
one you didn't
right.
listen to. You never listened to that one. So
I didn't listen
wild.
To that one. It's true. I've listened to the
other three.
I didn't hear that one.
You were actually right. If you would have stopped right there, like Jimmy Lake's going to be the coach next year.
Right.
Yeah, he actually is going to be the coach next year. That actually Chris Peterson after this season said, yeah, I'm done with this. I can't sit here and present to you and say this is good for the program.
Chris Peterson's a really good coach, right?
He's a proven commodity.
Yes.
That head coaching job is a hard job in college football. And I would contend it's harder than it's ever been. I was listening to Rick Neuheisel on his national show earlier this week talk about that. As a guy that was a prominent coach at Colorado and Washington and UCLA. And, you know, he is not surprised to see these 50-somethings just shut it down. He was not surprised that Bob Stoops, you know, shut it down a few years ago. That it's just the requirements of this job and the demands of this job and what it asks of these guys today being in that CEO position in charge of all of it. And, by the way, with the changing dynamics, with the transfer portal that's growing, with players' compensation that is coming, with everything that is on that job today, it is just more demanding than it's ever, in a schedule that never sleeps.
I'm buying the second part of that. I'm not buying the first. Half the presidential candidates are like 30 years older than those guys in their 50s. So I'm not buying that at 50-something, it's just the demands of the job are too hard
for them.
But
do those presidential candidates do that job for 20-some years ahead and just grind?
But I mean, what they do and the travel and this and that, I mean, like it's crazy and the pressure and all of that. I am absolutely buying the second part of your argument, though, that as the kids change, as the demands on that job change, as the things they're being asked to do in recruiting changes, I absolutely believe that that is affecting some of
them. And Chris Peterson, to me, is a little bit like the NCAA. The NCAA was never built for this model. Chris Peterson at Washington was just not built for this model at Washington. And you could feel some of that conflict and tension for years. You really could. Personally, when you were around, privately, when you were around him, publicly, you could feel some of the weight of all of that. When he filmed that 15-minute little infomercial last year on his boat.
This year, yeah.
Yeah, this last football season. Yeah. Yes, and he's coming over on the boat and he's doing all that because that's what you have to do. You have to market yourself. You have to sell your program. You have to do this. If you're going to recruit in the 4- and 5-star world, this is what you do. You've got to
be. That's what Dabo does?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what Saban does?
Absolutely.
And that's what Ed Orgeron is doing?
Yes, sir.
And all the best younger or just most successful coaches.
Yep. Mario Cristobal in Oregon.
Yes. That's like who he is, right?
Yes, that's who you are. And if you're going to live in that world and you're going to compete and try to get to that upper echelon, like you've got to have top 5 recruiting classes. Like the national champion the last decade, go look at their recruiting classes and where they rank. Like that's what you've got to do to appeal today, right? And market your and that is just not Chris Peterson.
He wants to coach football. He wants to raise men the way that he thinks they should be raised. And that's it. That's what he wants to do.
So what does he do? Does he go coach at a smaller program somewhere where you don't need to do that? Does he coach high school? Does he go to the pros?
The NFL where you don't have to recruit?
I mean, Chris Peterson would be a pretty interesting NFL offensive coordinator, wouldn't
he? I had a coach this year, a former coach, tell me this year while I was on the college football road, and we were talking about Washington and after a couple of these losses and just the wear and tear on Chris, and he said, you know what? Chris never wanted to be a head coach. He was never this climber. Right, you and I have worked with people in the media, and you just know they'll do whatever it takes to climb and to burn bridges and to rip people's throats out to like get to the prominent role. Like that's just what they're going to do.
Yeah.
They're
going to. How do you think Brock became the number 2 guy at Fox?
They're going to self promote, right?
It's going to
be
pretty.
Yeah, it's going to be about,
the trail of bodies behind.
Poor
Brock
Bob Schusen is like left decapitated by the side of the
Joe
road.
Joe Tessitore has to be on Monday Night Football so that Brock can be the number 2 guy in Fox.
Mark Jones. Carter Blackburn.
Is Carter even still doing this?
Yes.
All right.
Bunch of dudes that want to, bunch of guys
a lot of
that
blood on that
are trail. Willing to self-promote to get to be in on top. Right? That's what they desire to be. Man, I want to be that guy. I want to make that money. I want to be in that prominent role. I'll do whatever it takes. Chris Peterson was never going to do that. That's just never. He was very comfortable being a position coach and very comfortable being a coordinator. And then he goes to Boise, which ended up being the perfect fit for, 14 years? And turned down SC and turned down all these other jobs because this is perfect for me. You know what I get? I get 2- and 3-star guys, and I get to develop them. I don't have to worry about them leaving. I don't have to worry about them in their roles. I don't have to worry about runners. I don't have to worry about agents. I don't have to worry about all this other stuff that comes at these prominent programs. And I get to run this thing and grow and develop. And then being the underdog, which he likes to be, I get to go and beat Oklahoma, right? And I get that for all these years. And then ultimately, I think he looks at it at probably, 49, 50? He says, gosh, here's one chance at Washington, right? And they play second fiddle to the Seahawks in that market. right? There's Pete Carroll. He will always be the market share, and I can go there at that incredible school and all the resources and pay and the Pete Kwiatkowskis and these guys that have worked for me can go and triple their pay, and I can double my pay and do all of that, and we can win, and we can do it at starting at 6-5, and I can boot Marcus Peters out of the program.
Yeah, they're going to let me start this Boise State system I had here.
Yes.
And they're going to give me the leeway to do the whole thing. Not like SC where I have to do things a certain way in order to meet the expectations.
And I can run these guys out of the program, and I can recruit the 3-star Jake Brownings, and I can, you know, these guys, and I can live with it, and I can grow, and I can develop it. And then all of a sudden, the last few years, after a playoff appearance, now what?
Now
how are you
going to
beat Alabama?
Yeah.
How are you going to? That's fine, but how are you going to beat Penn State? That's all fine. How are you going to get to the next level?
Can you tell some of what you were talking about before we started here about the coaches in Texas? Is that something you can tell on this?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. So,
I think it's pretty relevant to this situation here in Washington.
Yeah. So my last week of the college football season, I had Texas Tech versus Texas, and Texas Tech had a new coach this year named Matt Wells. And Matt Wells said, "You know what? I'm going to win." Matt Wells came from Utah State, you know, maybe even a lesser job than Boise State, but at Utah State, guess what he could do? He could recruit 2- and 3-star dudes and develop them and grow them, and it was blue collar and bring your lunch pail, and we're going to make it, and didn't have to worry about any of the other stuff. And he had other job opportunities and other interviews through the years, but ultimately, because he had a bunch of 10-win seasons, did a good job, ultimately Texas Tech comes open in Lubbock, Texas, where guess what he's going to recruit? And he even told us, he said, "We're going to win. I got 18 dudes this year in my recruiting class, and most of them are all 3-stars, and they all got a little edge to them, and maybe they're not 6'4", and they're 6'1", but we're going to win with these guys, and I don't have to worry about transfer portals, and I don't have to worry about divas, and I don't have to worry about strings attached." And then literally, that later in the day, we had Tom Herman, the coach of Texas, who ends up firing his D coordinator, firing his offensive coordinator 2 days after our game, and he is gassed. And I was chatting with one of their sports information directors who's been there a long time. He's like, "Yeah, man, it's exhausting." And guess what Tom Herman had last year? 5-star class. Top 5 class, all these 5-stars and 4-stars. And guess what they come with? Agendas. Guess what they come with? 7-on-7 coaches chirping. Guess what they come with? Runners and agents who want him playing. And guess what they come with? Early enrollee, because I'm going to be there 2.5 years. And guess what they come with? At the first sight of adversity, I'm out. This ain't what I signed up for. I'm out. Right. And that is that world that he's navigating, and he's 7-5 going, "Gosh, how do I win here? How do I do this?" And, you know, it's taken a pretty special Nick Saban at Alabama and a pretty special Urban Meyer at Ohio State and a pretty, those guys at those programs.
You have to be specifically wired to be able to handle those kinds of problems.
Yes, you do.
And that is a different wiring than what it's always taken to be a good football coach.
Yes.
It's a new problem in college.
Yes. And right? Nick Saban
and
has.
And Pete Carroll, by the way, is perfectly wired
for absolutely.
Also. And Pete thrived in it in
the 2000s.
Pete Carroll's probably if you want to point to somebody who helped cause this whole new form of coaching in college football, you'd probably point to Pete as much as anybody for changing the game and making it all about the glitz and the glamour and catering to the kids.
And what
right?
has USC looked for the last 11 years?
Pete Carroll.
What have they looked for and not been able to find? And they got a really good man who just won 8 games this year. In a year, they were supposed to win 5 or 6 in Fire Clay, and they're sitting there going, "Gosh, is there something better? Is there another guy that can do this? Is there another Pete Carroll or Urban or Dabo or how many of those guys
There's very, very few. And maybe Ed Orgeron is going to end up being in that category, even if he's not the greatest coach, because he gets that,
yes.
right? He seems to understand the recruiting element of what it takes with kids.
So, and I think, and to spin this back to Chris a little bit, his personality is he is the ultimate micromanager. And you just can't, if you're going to do that in these programs, you can't. You know what Nick Saban has? A staff of 30. It's an NFL staff. He's got 10 coaches. He's got 20 analysts. You know what Ohio State has? It has a staff of 25 or 30, right? And you're just not going to, whether it's your personality, Dabo, right? We were there. Huge staff, huge people that have been there a long time in those positions.
The problem with all of that, and I think you're right about all of this. I really do. I think it's perfectly, it makes perfect sense to me. The problem is, it's cool that, what'd you say the guy's name is? Wells in Texas
Matt
Tech?
Wells.
Matt Wells.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, you'll win some games. But at the end of the day, there's only going to be 5 or 6 schools that are going to be able to win. because there's only a couple of coaches out there who are going to be able to harness the five-star recruits. And there's only a couple of schools where those five-star recruits are going to go to. And so once those coaches find the right dance partner with the right school, it's over. Right? I mean, once you get Dabo in one of those places, once you get Nick Saban, once you get, I mean, it's over. If Urban Meyer decides to come back somewhere, and he should, because, you know, he's one of those guys, because he's going to, and he can't help himself, and that's who Urban Meyer is. It's going to happen. And is this kid at Ohio State? What's the guy's name? Ryan Day?
Ryan Day.
Is he one of those guys,
too?
He's
pretty good, man.
Does he have that same personality?
Good. So that's the spin the question forward,
And one of the guys in the Pac-12 North seems to have that type of wiring in Mario Cristobal, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he may be, I don't know if he's as good a coach as Chris Peterson, but he sure seems to be wired to be at a school that is capable of bringing in big four and five-star guys, which Oregon is. We've seen it before.
Yep.
And having the right personality to deal with them in 2020 and beyond. And so I wonder how much of that I wonder whether David Shaw will stick around much longer.
Yeah, 4-8.
Wouldn't you put him
chance to stick around much
Well, fine, but wouldn't you put him in the Chris Peterson category of a guy who's just not going to compromise?
Correct. So now is Howdy said, spin it forward. Is Jimmy Lake that guy? Does Jimmy Lake have that capability of being that guy? Jimmy Lake turned down head coaching jobs.
Well, he's got the personality.
Jimmy Lake turned down the Alabama D coordinator job. Jimmy Lake turned down NFL opportunities. Jimmy Lake has turned those things down because I think he's been sitting here going, you know what? I'm the next Lincoln Riley. There's Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. And you know what? Lincoln Riley came in, was his coordinator for 2 years, and Bob Stoops on a day in July just said, I'm out, and they elevated from within someone that had been there a couple years, a young ascending coordinator, and Jimmy Lake's got more. He's been here 6 years through this whole run with Pete, right, and had multiple opportunities and said no because I think, like my instincts, he knew that this Chris was not going to be long for this and forever for this by any means. And when he stepped down, it took Jen Cohen a day, right? It didn't take very long when Chris told Jen, like, officially, I'm done with this.
Hey, I mean, it happened at the same time.
Yeah. And you know what? Okay, so, Jimmy, come in the room.
So I got a few questions kind of based on that. Let me back up first, and then I'll get back to Jimmy. Like, what do you think was the nail in the coffin? Like, what do you think was the moment Chris Peterson was like, you know what? I'm out. When did that happen? Do you think it happened a year ago? Because Jimmy Lake did turn that job. What was the potential job offer he had a year ago?
Alabama coordinator, D coordinator.
Colorado head coach was interested.
So, I mean, did he know this a year ago? Did Peterson say, hey, give me one more year? And then it's yours at the end of this season? That doesn't seem...
No, I don't think so.
So what was the straw that broke the camel's back?
You think it was during this season?
Do you think it was having to... I have a guess, and I have no idea, but I think it was having to count out of the quarterbacks at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Having to, you know, Haener, and then I've got to keep Haener here, and I've got to play this game.
Yep. If he doesn't get the job, he's leaving.
And now Sermon and Yankoff are going to... You know what? Yeah. I'm done with all of these prima donnas. Yeah. Forget this.
Yes. I didn't really want to do this whole Jacob Eason
saga. I didn't want Jacob Eason to begin with.
And it's in my face, and I know that everybody thinks it's a good idea. I don't, but I can't fight every single person.
If I want to go good to great, I have to do it with Jacob Eason because that's just the way it is. And I'm out. And the fact that I've got to placate Jacob Haener, Jake Sermon, and Colson Yankoff. I'm done with this.
And he spent 1 year getting away from his philosophy this entire year, and it was a disaster in his mind. And said, you know what? I don't want to go back to this. I feel bad about what I did, and I don't want to do this anymore.
So do you think that was the moment?
I'm sure that was enormous in it. I would put it simply like this. I think the guy wants to be black and white and has realized in today's college football, I've got to be gray, and that's not me. Right? Aside from all the marketing and other stuff, like I'm a pretty black and white guy, and I don't like being a hypocrite. I don't like Kyle Brown playing my sound bites. Right,
when I've vultures.
Yep, with these vultures and everybody else that I don't like doing that. I don't like looking, you know, hypocritical that I'm taking other recruits and I just don't like that. I can't look at myself in the mirror. I think he's a pretty ethical dude. I think he's a pretty moral dude in an amoral business. And just like over the course of all of it, and yes, it came to a head with this quarterback situation. Because at Boise, I could play Jake Haener. In fact, I never had to worry about a five-star National Player of the Year coming back home and all of the pressure and expectations and all of it. I could just simply play the best guy. And I could play a 5'11 left-hander from Prosser, Washington, right, and absolutely grow and develop him around everybody else, and we could beat Oklahoma in a Fiesta Bowl. Like that was – I've been there. I've done that. So I just don't want to placate all of this and play to all of these games.
So,
and I think that conflict and that tension was just like, I'm done. I'm tired. I'm worn out. I need a recharge and a reboot, and we'll see where college football goes. And if it keeps going in this direction, then I won't be back in it.
And so what direction does Jimmy Lake take the program?
Oh, I think he's on, like Donkey Kong. Yeah, I think he is built exactly the opposite.
So he's cool for the gray? Yep. I'm in. Let's live in the gray.
He's had to have had now, knowing that his goal was to be a head coach, and assuming that he thought it was going to be Washington, he's had to have had a blueprint in mind for years.
Oh, no question.
And he knows exactly how he wants to do this and what he wants to do.
He's got the purple Viper or Camaro or whatever, the bright purple one that he'll come down and drive down. He'll want to be on the marketing materials. He'll want to do whatever it takes. He'll want to, you know, sell in that way.
And not for vanity's sake.
No, that's just the way that he knows.
Wired. He's got some brashness.
He's wired that way. I'll talk about Mike Leach if I got to. And I love facing Mike Leach. Like, he's got the willingness at times to do those things.
Does all this make you sad?
Yeah, to a degree. Yeah. That a very, very good, just I think a very good man and a great coach is ultimately walking away from the system that is so clearly these haves versus have-nots. That is further, we've always known this. There's always been blue bloods. That's been that way for generations, right? There's always been Ohio States and always been Notre Dame's, always been blue bloods. But it just feels so much more in every capacity, haves and have-nots.
I just, for some reason, as you're talking, I was just imagining like Bo Schembechler just shaking his head at this whole thing. Like, you've got to be kidding me. The college football, and I know that's like a million years ago now. The other side of it, though, is there are still tough guys in college football. I mean, Nick Saban is still as hard on kids as anybody, right?
How much longer does he have? I mean, really?
As long as he wants.
He loses Tua. He loses this year. His defense is, you know, all these
analysts.
You think
the whole thing crumbles?
I don't know if Ed Orgeron and LSU is going anywhere. I think the way that he's built that thing, and if he keeps his kids in Louisiana and that area and Texas around, and he keeps his coordinator around.
And you got Kirby. And Georgia. And you got Dabo. And yeah, all right.
I mean, I don't know if it goes on forever. He's not 55, right? I mean, he's Pete's age. So, I don't know. It's yeah, it does, though. Like, at the core of it, it makes
but, but
it
he's
a little...
not struggling. I mean, yes, you're right. He may at some point just be done just because of time. But his style is not no longer working.
No,
right?
But,
I mean, like, it's
but
still
Alabama
working just
is going to look for the next Nick Saban, right? And maybe it's Dabo. Maybe they just pay him $20 million a year and get Dabo out of Clemson, and he comes home and finishes his career there. Who knows? You know,
that'll be lame.
Yeah.
That would be really lame if that happens. Yeah. I would think less of Dabo and I would think less
of
Alabama.
He's a Bama guy.
I know. You got to know his story, though.
Huh? You got to know his story being a walk-on at Alabama and how much that meant. Like, that's not just like, hey, this is the premier job, I'm going to leave.
But you're also seeing Chip Kelly completely. That's not working at all at UCLA, right? I mean, and he's another sort of hard edge type of my way or the highway type of guy. Wouldn't you put Harbaugh? Harbaugh's sort of a weird mix of both of those things.
Yes, he is.
He's got all of the flash and the sizzle with his program, but then like the sternness.
Yep.
Is that working?
Winning 9 games a year.
It is, and yet it doesn't feel like it's working.
Ohio State for 7 years.
And they never feel dominant. They feel like they're just sort of, you know, another good team out there. So
I'm not going to sit here and pronounce it now with Jimmy Lake. You're going to become one of these five blue bloods. I am going to say Jimmy Lake will bring a totally different style. It will be fascinating to see what he does offensively because there's no way Bush Hamden is going to be the OC. They'll finish out this bowl game and everything else. That will be in how much staff turnover. You know, Bob Gregory, the linebacker coach. Pete Kwiatkowski's already been elevated to D coordinator, but, you know, just what he does, his first little fingerprints will be that offensive staff, and I think that will be a fascinating conversation and one that I'm sure will be worthy
Peterson
of this podcast
said
time.
At his presser Tuesday morning that the program doesn't need to be blown up, but it needs to be, quote, tweaked and changed.
Yep. Yep, and it's somebody like Jimmy in his personality, in his energy, in his age, in everything to move it in a different direction.
Here's my hope for Jimmy Lake, who I don't know a lot about other than sort of the Mike Leach comments and the fact that he's a pretty good defense coordinator. Based on the way you describe him and the personality, I hope he turns UW into a Legion of Boom style team. That they've got some of that edge, attitude, and fun factor that the Legion of Boom had. And Kyle, you'll hate it, and you'll be mad about it, and you'll hate them even more rooting against them, which I'm sure you will be. But that would be the biggest win possible, right?
Big, talented guys with lots of edge
and tons of attitude. Yeah. that, I mean, that would be, it's not Chris Peterson. It's not what he did, right? He had Vita Vea who paused 30 seconds before answering one of our questions. But it was, Vita Vea was on TV the other day after he made a big play. They showed him sort of after the game talking with some of the other players.
Pass.
Yes, it was after that.
Heaviest player in the NFL history.
I was watching to see, like, can he even talk to the other guy?
Does he know it happened?
Yeah, he was just fine talking to them. It turns out it was more of an us thing than anything else. But. I mean, the hope is that Jimmy Lake turns them into an LOB.
What's he call
edge
his
DBs?
Like Death Row? I mean,
so there you go.
Yeah, Death Row Dogs.
Spin it, boys.
That'd be a little different. That would make it pretty fun there on Montlake. All right, got a bunch of NFL questions for you. And also, Brock, one of my great titles is in trouble. I'll tell you about it next. Brock, I've had a lot of titles on this show over the years, as you know, right? I'm not necessarily a handy.
Oh, so that's right.
Uh-huh. We talked a little bit about that.
The pretentious elitist alert.
Yes, there's been that. But one title that I think I've really held tight to over the last 5 years or
Contrarian.
So. Not that one. No, has been Mr. Christmas. It's really meant a lot to me to become Mr. Christmas. Obviously, I'm Jewish.
An evolution, really.
Right. I mean, I'm Jewish, didn't celebrate Christmas as a kid, and I continue to be Jewish, but celebrate Christmas with my kids and my wife. And,
a bit contrarian.
And I've gotten into it by becoming Mr. Christmas. I was basically told, find a way to get into this because it's important to me. I was like, okay. And so I became Mr. Christmas. And
it's
I'm,
a revolution, really.
I would say so. Yes. I went from evolution to revolution. I got really into the tree and the lights and decorating. And the music, certainly. And so, you know, this is now my time of year.
Is Deck the Halls really your favorite?
No. Deck the Halls?
The Carpenters.
No. Yeah. Anything by the Carpenters or Celine Dion's an immediate check to see what else is on. But this year, Mr. Christmas has found his first hardship. Mm. And I'm not going to quit, but I may need, you know, I asked for some help online. I didn't get
much. I saw this,
unsurprisingly.
Actually.
My tree is droopy. Like, as soon as we got it home, and it's like a... It's a nice, full tree. Like, we saw it on the lot, right? It's a 9-foot tree, eight or nine-foot noble fir. What? Like, it's what? Well,
you already said the key word.
The preposition
here.
With on?
Well, the lot.
Yeah, on the lot.
That's...
Well, we didn't cut it down, but it was at a tree. I don't want to give the name of the tree farm that
no.
we got it because
no,
I'm
fine.
A little disappointed in the
Surely
tree.
Not.
It's fine. But if it's pre-cut,
I've always
rolling the dice.
But I've always gotten pre-cut trees. Mm. It's never been a problem before.
It was
before.
Cut in Eastern Siberia on October 14th.
Also, but that's never been a problem before.
At the same tree farm?
Also, that because we have...
At the same lot?
Same place. Yes, I've gone to the same...
Interesting.
And it's a nice...
But you've had this problem before.
No.
Mm-hmm. You had an infestation.
I recall this.
You drooped that tree. It died. You had needles all over your floor for 3 weeks before Christmas.
The needles were falling off on like December 10th, 2 years ago.
They were?
Yes!
What are you talking about?
We didn't even go to your house. We talked about this for weeks.
No.
Yes,
you got the same advice. Ask twice.
What? Really?
Yes!
why doesn't Heather remember that?
Mr. Christmas, where have you gone?
Mike!
Mr. Christmas took an 11-month sabbatical. He forgot his job.
You hit the reset button on everything Christmas.
That did not happen.
Yes.
Yes.
What are you talking
it
about?
Did,
probably find your tweets.
You no.
Tony would be better at it than me.
No.
It only happened one other time. To be fair, it happened only one other time. But you had a serious issue with the tree. Needles were coming off. You thought it was an infestation. You thought, and we sought out help from the people.
I swear to God, I'm not playing a character. I don't remember this even a little bit. I don't even have, there's not even, a little memory of this. Like, oh, you're sort of reminding me. Like, it is as if you were speaking about a movie I've never seen.
You are Pete Carroll on 3rd and 19. You see your present situation, and you cannot see outside of it.
Yes.
I can't believe it.
So what are we going to do this time?
Well, the thing is, it's not dying because there are no needles on the ground.
Right.
It's just a droopy tree.
All right.
December 22nd, 2016, Salk tweeted a picture and says,
picture
doesn't do justice to how droopy this thing is.
Wait, hold on. When is that?
2016.
What's the date?
It was December 2016, December 22nd.
Yeah, but that's at the end.
But
that's,
we had been on the air
hold on.
Saying,
go
We've
look
got
at the
droopy
picture.
Tree.
And look at the tree and see if this brings back memories to the tree.
Well, that tree looks much better than my tree now. That tree looks great. It looks much better. I'll take a picture of the one now because that one actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, that was December 22nd, 2016, nearly 3 years
but
ago.
But that's almost
a
Christmas.
For a week.
Well, that means right at the end it started to droop.
But to be fair, this was before you were really quote unquote Mr. Christmas.
Right, I was still in my apprenticeship at the time. At that time, I was still learning
still
about
Junior the, Christmas.
That's no, right.
That's right. So, right. So now you're Mr. Christmas.
But look,
Christmas.
Okay, fine. On December, what is that, 26th?
22nd.
All right, well, that's right almost to Christmas. You already had the tree a month. I only had this tree for like 4 days.
Right.
And it's already drooping,
you
which makes
lemon,
me very
bro.
Nervous.
Yeah, you got a bad one.
So Sprite, that's what I do.
No, I read through. Passed. I was curious, actually. This one piqued my curiosity.
Well, like most things, when you ask people online on Twitter if they can help you, you get a combination between some very earnest, helpful people and then the most mean-spirited folks in the world.
Sure.
It's like, you know what you should do? Take your tree and stab your eye with the top of it. I don't think that's going to help. You know what you should do is get a fake tree, you idiot.
Is it possible to take it out and recut it? Because it sounded like that was...
Not now.
Not now?
Because it really, we didn't notice the droopiness until after it was totally
Can
decorated.
You get the whole family to kind of help pick it up, and then you get underneath there with a
what
saw.
What are you talking about?
And just kind of recut the bottom of it so the sap can, you know, find a way. Because
yes.
It sounds like you've got clogged sap.
Yes.
That's what it sounds like.
You got arterial blockage. You should ask the Graz about this.
Maybe I can get the Graz to come over
and help.
That
tree's got some arterial blockages.
Just don't send us any pictures of your bare butt.
Me and the Graz, two Jews fixing a Christmas tree together. What could possibly go wrong?
To be fair.
Oh, Michael.
To be fair, I think Howdy does owe you on this one. Maybe this can be the make.
No, I'm not cashing in my chip for this.
He was supposed to take the tree down, the branches from the neighbor.
I'm not cashing in my chip for this. No way.
Have him hold the tree up while you saw and just recut a new little.
There's no way Howdy could hold up this tree. Mm. It's huge. There's no chance. Anyway, so that's where Mr. Christmas is at. I thought I would give you guys an update on that. Also, question that, because Heather was reading something. I've got a bunch of holiday things.
Okay.
Which would you prefer? More holidays in the year? Like right now we have like roughly 10 holidays that most people get over the course of a year. Would you rather have more holidays or more vacation days?
Ooh.
Like if they were to add 5 days off to your year. Brock, you can't answer this because your whole life is about to become vacation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
For the rest of us who have normal lives, normal jobs, and are actually going to continue working instead of bailing on life like you have now done, would you rather have 5 more holidays, which are days that are assigned as long weekends like that, or have an extra 5 vacation days?
5 more holidays.
Holidays.
Yep. I take 5 more. As long as they're
weekend
adjacent holidays.
You're more likely
holidays.
To use them. Hey.
Exactly. It's kind of strange because in theory you should prefer the vacation days because they would be at your leisure. You could take them whenever you want. You could take them all together. You could take them in exactly the same way the 5 holidays would be.
And as we've long discussed on the Brock and Salk show, the 3-day weekend leads to the 4-day week, which is
awesome.
Awesome.
Which
it's
is
fantastic.
Better than the 3-day weekend.
Yep.
So it's interesting that you would go with more holidays that are assigned to you.
There's something communal about holidays.
Yes.
Everybody kind of celebrates it together.
It also leads to more traffic. I mean, there's some things about it that aren't great, but I think I agree. I would rather have 5 more holidays than 5 more vacation days.
Plus, you get the pre-holiday in the office where like everyone's like kind of relaxed. They're just dressed down
working,
a little bit.
But they're not
maybe
working.
A short day.
Yeah.
Like that's also a great day for office bonding.
Yes.
Everyone's in such a great mood.
But when would you put those holidays? Because as you've said before, if you're going to get work
done,
when is time to get
actual
work done?
That's true. That is a problem because there's so many times. This is not a time of the year to get any work done. I hope you're not at work trying to get anything done for the next month. Once you come back from New Year's, which for most people will be like January 5th this year, that's like the one time of the year you have like a sprint to get some work done right when the year begins. And then forget it. Like you can't get anything done. How many plates of food did you eat on Thanksgiving? Oh, you didn't really do Thanksgiving again.
No, I got to do it in the hotel because I worked, you know, 2 games, double time, a little overtime.
Brock's and, always
working. Always
know.
Working.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always
when
working.
Are you ever going to have time
so
to make
Austin,
up for that?
So in Austin, Texas, I actually had a decent Thanksgiving meal, albeit about 7:30 at night. It's pretty good.
Okay.
Pretty good.
I had 6 plates of food.
No, you sure
didn't.
Awesome.
Please.
No, you did
I crushed
not.
Thanksgiving. Ooh. I think I had my best Thanksgiving performance of all time.
Well, I guess you did. I saw that. You tweeted 4 of
your
them. Plates.
Yeah. I ate 6. Because we went to Salty's, we did the whole buffet, and I did a plate of seafood as like a warm up,
sure.
Then a plate of Thanksgiving, then another plate of Thanksgiving,
whoa.
Then another plate of seafood, whoa. Then 2 dessert plates.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Oh
move?
Yeah, I love.
Doesn't
that
sound good, Howdy?
That sounds awesome. That sounds like the day after Thanksgiving for me when my wife's uncle came to town with 4 pounds of home smoked brisket. That we then combined with our turkey.
That sounds
and
fantastic.
Had smoked brisket and turkey and mashed potatoes.
Brisket. I've heard a couple people mention they add brisket to their Thanksgiving. And it's a really good idea.
Man,
who doesn't
so
like brisket?
Good.
You should have done that in Austin, Brock. They got plenty of
brisket. They had some brisket there.
All right, last quick thing, and then we'll get back to some sports conversation here. And then we have mean tweets to finish today off. This has been driving me crazy. So I told you a week ago that we saw Frozen 2 as a family.
Yeah.
And have you seen it yet? Have any of you guys seen it? There's this sound that is constant in Frozen 2. It's like the call for Elsa to go find what's out in the world. All right, so here's the sound. Ready? This is from Frozen 2. All right, so they play this like over and over again, the whole movie. And it's driving me crazy because it's clearly stolen from Stairway to Heaven. And if you listen to Stairway to Heaven.
I thought it was in ya.
No, it's. Listen. Elsa here.
Yeah.
I mean, they clearly ripped off Stairway to Heaven for it.
Yeah. Absolutely did.
So I finally.
I mean, it's a pretty generic sound. I don't know.
I don't know. As soon as I heard it, I'm like, that's Stairway to Heaven.
I bet they paid crazy royalties on that just to make sure they used it.
What's funny about it is that Stairway to that Led Zeppelin got sued because they say that they stole Stairway to Heaven from some random band that nobody's ever heard of. How fascinating that now Stairway to Heaven has been,
if I remember right.
They may be Afronesis. Yes. May have been Afronesis. All right.
Bloomington, Indiana.
All right, back to some sports conversation. I have a few questions for you, Brock. And yes, how did this goes to my narrative? Who would you draft first? Justin Herbert, Jacob Eason, or Jalen Hurts?
Tua Tagovailoa with a broken hip.
You don't get that.
Oh, I don't get
him? I'm not giving you that choice. I understand he's sort of the perfect combo, but this is a harder choice. You've got to take one of these two drop-back statue quarterbacks, or you can have a guy that for the most part has been more of a runner than a passer.
In the first round, I wouldn't take any of them. If my job was on the line and I was a GM, and by the way, I saw Mike Mayock over the weekend at Oklahoma and a couple other GMs, an old Seahawk executive as well. It's kind of fun to catch up with all of them. I would not take any of those guys in the first round.
Okay.
I would not hedge my bet is like a GM and this is my first round.
How about
and
in
my
the second
job's
round?
Going to be tied to it. Probably Herbert. I think I would take Herbert. And I know where you're going with this.
Jalen Hurts is going to be the best of those three quarterbacks.
Jalen just doesn't see the field. So I've seen enough of Jalen. He runs it, and when in trouble, he kind of runs it, and he runs it violently, and he is an amazing college quarterback. But he just has a hard time seeing the field.
So
Lamar Jackson saw the field in college, right? And to go and compare and contrast, he saw the field. He threw in cuts on time, right? He made a lot of plays. He pushed Clemson to the very edge, and on a 4th-and-1, threw it in the flat. I mean, he did a lot more. Jalen has a hard time.
But all I heard from you
field.
Last year or 2 years ago now was, yeah, but he's inaccurate. He's not accurate. It's not going to work. And all right, maybe Jalen doesn't see the field well enough. But I'm just becoming more and more convinced that the ability to run like that is going to be maybe enough for the right coach to have some level of success with him. And I think Justin Herbert is going to be nothing. Yep. And I think Jacob Eason is going to be worse. Like, I don't think either one of those guys are going to end up being very good pro quarterbacks.
Yeah, I would take Joe Burrow. I would take Tua Tagovailoa.
I get it. I would take those guys,
take
too.
Jacob Fromm ahead of any of those
guys. I would agree with you. I would also take those guys, although I'm not sold on Tua. I'm not sold on him. Burrow looks like the real deal. I mean, he looks like exactly what you'd
want. Looks like Eli Manning.
Now, he doesn't run very much, right? I mean, Burrow, he can create just enough. I will say
but he
this.
Creates just enough.
I will say this. It's interesting to see Tom Brady now where it's either he's got to have people open and he can move a little in the pocket or it's just dead.
Well, I wanted to get to him next.
Sheesh.
I mean, what's going on? He's inaccurate all of a sudden.
Well, he's just throwing it away. Like, he has to just throw it away.
No,
he can't move at
obviously
all.
That's happening too. But I have seen more inaccurate passes from Tom Brady this year than I can ever remember. I mean, the one thing about Brady,
yes,
even when he was young, before he was quote-unquote Tom Brady and the guy throwing for all those yards.
Deadly accurate.
He was accurate and good decision-making.
Yep.
Decision-making still pretty good, but the accuracy, you're just like, where'd it go?
Yes.
Is that age?
Yeah, because to me, I look at a lot of it, and half of them are throwaways. Mm-hmm. He's literally thrown it to where his guy may get it or nobody gets it.
Did you see that Dan Orlovsky video from the game? I mean, it's pretty interesting.
Oh, he's mad.
Brady, like, I'm done with this guy.
Right.
I don't trust this guy.
Yep.
How
think he'd like to have Josh Gordon? Do you think he'd like to have Antonio Brown?
Well, he had those guys.
He did.
And
they both kind of got run out.
Yeah, but
one ran himself out.
I don't think that happens without Tom knowing at least a little bit about it, don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, that power struggle with Tom and Bill Belichick has always been an issue.
Well, it may be too late, though, now for anything. I mean, at this point, if you're another team, are you taking Tom Brady next year if he's available?
Oh, of course you are.
I mean, just to sell tickets.
Manning with a fused neck. It's true. You know that he was terrible,
and he
still found a way to win a Super Bowl in two years.
That's a good point.
And even the Seahawks were guilty of getting in on that action.
That's true. Yeah, all right, fair enough. Somebody would probably do that. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, we talked about a little bit, but what is the ceiling for them this year?
Oh, they're going to be the number one seed in the AFC, right?
Are they the Super Bowl team?
Yeah,
because you take them over the Chiefs, take them over the Patriots.
Well, I think
take them over the Texans.
I think the playoffs will go through Baltimore. You know, at 10-2 now, and I don't know if I see them necessarily losing again, or if they do, maybe once. Got the tiebreaker ahead of New England, so yeah, I think the playoffs will go through Baltimore, and they will have every opportunity to play their style. Can someone take them out of their style? Right, and we saw that style. It got crystallized in this building.
I mean, I would say the Seahawks played them about as well as anybody other than the Chiefs this year, right?
Yep.
But the Chiefs beat them in a really close
game. But I think they will look
game.
Back to this season, and it was the start of the winning streak and everything else, and they will look back and go, you know where this all started, this magical roll that we were on? It started on that fourth down call, right, where they said, and you saw John Harbaugh go to Lamar Jackson.
Where he called timeout and then came back out, and that was a good timeout,
yes,
as it turns out. That was actually a pretty good timeout.
Yep.
Gosh, the way the teams are going for it on fourth down. I mean, another maybe dumb prediction of mine, but I'm not. I'm becoming at least curious, if not convinced, that within a few years, teams are just going for it on fourth and anything five or less outside of your own 35-40 is going to become the norm.
It will be fascinating when you've got enough data points to really analyze that.
They're going to get there.
Because right now, like this season starts to help as the Ravens have gone for it, what, 19 times or something? Like you start to get a large enough sample size and enough data points to really help in those
decisions.
I
just get the sense you're going to see teams, once they get past their own 40, not the other team's 40, that, and maybe even their own 35, they say, look, offenses are so good in this league, and there's such a chance that the other team's just going to come back and score that we should trust our own offense rather than our own defense and just go for it on fourth and three, even if we're our own 38-yard line. I don't know. Maybe it won't come to pass because NFL coaches are notoriously slow to adapt to anything risky like that. But I think that some of these teams, and you saw San Francisco and Baltimore do it over the weekend, may push them in that direction.
So you're remembering the tree now from 3 years ago?
No, not even a little bit. All right. Not even a hint.
I was wondering after 15 minutes, in back of your head.
We need to get some Ginkgo biloba back in here.
I don't think that'll help at this point. I think it's too late for me. All right, some mean tweets coming up. Well, Brock, your final regular season game is now in the books for the year. So you have, what, a bowl game left to go? And then what are you going to do?
A lot of work.
A lot of work.
I'm in here a lot. I'll be in here a bunch.
You are on the radio 3 times a day.
World. I'm going to be with Compassion all over the world. It'll be awesome. So I'll be really busy.
I'm sure
you will. I'll
try
to make time for you.
I can't wait to call you in the summer and be like, what are you doing? You're just going to be like, oh, I'm looking at my sport court. How come?
Like,
I don't have anything else to do. I'm just staring at this thing.
Golfing again. Sock's going to flip.
Oh, I know. That'd be bad.
That's probably going to be
bad. So I had a doubleheader in Texas and Oklahoma.
Did the people like you?
Thanksgiving? Ooh, no.
Let's find out.
It really sucks we have to have Joe Davis and Brock Huard tonight. I can't stand those fools.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. Joe Davis, Brock Huard, Bruce Feldman. Your coverage of TTU versus Texas football is horse.
Oh,
God.
Howdy. This is not a good bit.
That's what the people said.
Brock Huard is a space cadet.
Space
Brock game. Huard is awful. Thrift store awful.
Dude,
jeez. How do you even edit that, Howdy? There's nothing that can be done.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Thrift store?
Thrift store
to be
what?
Honest, if I had to listen to Brock Huard and his constant negativity about any team, I'd probably prefer it to be during a Texas game.
Hold on a second. I might have to stop the music for a second for this. Wait a minute.
What?
Brock's what?
To be honest, if I had to listen to Brock Huard and his constant negativity...
You can stop it right there. What planet is this person living on? What world does that person inhabit?
Did you get a chance to listen to any of my broadcasts?
No.
No, you didn't.
You know
watch
what? You know what the best thing about this
Kyle,
doing this podcast now is?
Of course,
we watched the Apple Cup. Watched that whole Texas game. I watched Saturday.
Once I watched the Apple Cup on Friday, I realized I didn't have to watch any more college football and that I was free until Sunday. Right. Nothing made me happier than that.
Next.
Lots of fans in their own gray out on the right-hand side of DKR. And Brock Heward looks like he's been spending all night doing cocaine.
Whoa.
Hello.
Brock.
Don't do that.
How many times have we told you?
Don't
lay
you
off
like
the
that, man.
Cocaine.
Ugh. Brock Heward. Ugh.
Coach Lake is as arrogant as you were when I watched you play in high school.
Whoa.
Wow. That's deep.
Yeah. That one actually probably is true.
They were waiting on that.
That's somebody who watched Brock in middle school destroy all the women's basketball team.
Brock Heward looks like he came from the same factory as Shepard Smith.
That's true, by the way. I Google searched some Shepard Smith pictures.
Did you say Brock?
Whoa, Shepard Smith.
Dude. Somebody's going to have to bleep that, too.
Mike.
Son of a gun. Doesn't...
You can't swear like that, Mike.
Right. Doesn't Brock kind of look like he does come from the Shepard Smith factory?
The same
wider
factory.
Eyes. He's got kind of the wide eyes.
Different
like
wing. Yeah.
Brock Heward has no clue what he's talking about in regards to this Texas team.
Hattie swearing will never get old.
Are we done here? Are you almost
I was
done?
Looking forward to watching this Texas Tech versus Texas game. And then I turned it on, and Brock Heward was commentating the game. I'll be watching this game on mute.
Oh, no. Do you think people do that? Do you think somebody...
I'm going to flip to the other station.
Do you think somebody watches a game on mute? I don't care. As bad as whoever it is you can't stand the most.
Joe Tessitore and Booger McFarlane.
Well, for me, I'll still go back to Mike Patrick and Joe Theismann and Paul McGuire when they used to do Sunday Night Football. As bad a broadcast... But I still would never consider putting it on mute.
You can't watch football.
No.
Brock Heward is an absolute idiot on his very best days.
That's true.
Can you just shut the up about Texas? Your stupidity and Longhorn bias are totally obvious to the point of disgust. Blah, 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 Brock Heward.
That's it. We're done.
That has to be the last one. We have to get out of here. Howdy. This podcast has run long. We're done. We will be. Are we back next week?
Hayes in the barn. Yes.
All right, Mr. Christmas. I'll have an update on what's going on with my tree and everything else. Have a great week. Rams on Sunday Night Football. We'll catch you guys next week. Until then, the hay.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!